This is Gulf Coast Life. I'm Mike Conivery. Thanks for joining us. The 2018 blue-green algae bloom that filled much of Lake Okeechobee, the Caloosahatchee River, and its estuary with thick, green, toxic algae left no doubt that real solutions to nutrient pollution must be found, not only for the sake of Southwest Florida's economy, but for the health of its citizens. Florida's blue-green algae task force produced a number of recommendations back in October, including better septic tank monitoring, collecting more water quality data, taking a closer look at best management practices for agriculture, and providing more transparency when warning the public about health risks related to the algae. And the Florida legislature is considering legislation that would implement some of those changes, but none of them are really what you might consider out-of-the-box or truly innovative approaches to solving our persistent nutrient pollution problem and preventing the algae blooms nutrient pollution can fuel. On today's show, we're joined by a researcher who has spent his career working on wetland science to learn about an idea that is definitely out of the box. Dr. Bill Mitch is currently eminent scholar and director of FGCU's Everglades Wetland Research Park and Juliet C. Sproul Chair for Southwest Florida Habitat Restoration at the University. He also designed and is founding director of the Olentangy River Wetland Research Park at The Ohio State University, where he taught for 26 years and has been professor emeritus since 2012. And he co-wrote the college text Wetlands back in the 1980s. It's now in its fourth edition and is still being used. He joins us in studio to explain his wetlaculture idea and preview a two-day workshop that's happening this Thursday and Friday in Naples. Dr. Bill Mitch, welcome back to Gulf Coast Life.
Well, thank you.
To engage with us and your fellow listeners about this conversation or any of our shows, find us on Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So for starters, just lay out the basics of what's going to be happening during this two-day workshop.
Well, in a way, we're showcasing something that began in, 6 years ago when Everglades Foundation announced a $10 million prize if you could take phosphorus out of the water and return it to society. And I went and visited my dean, and he said, Bill, that's in your wheelhouse. And that's all he had to say, because then I said, we really started to pursue it. We got a great team together. We got a great idea called wetlaculture.
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 We'll get more to that later.
Yeah, right. And then we started to develop it, and you know, we thought we were going to win $10 million because we had a great team, a great idea. And then they changed the rules on the prize, and we couldn't continue. We were in the quarterfinals.
Oh, yeah?
We were in the final 15, but we couldn't go any further because they wanted to take our contraption. That's a pejorative word. Take our contraption up to Canada and see if it worked with dirty Canada water.
And by nature, you don't have a movable.
We don't have a contraption.
Right.
We have a landscape. And so We pleaded with them because they did have experiments started in Ohio for that very reason, and they wouldn't count them.
Hmm. So you're still pressing ahead with the idea, though, trying to get it out
there. Still charging ahead with the idea. I lost a lot of friends, though.
Oh, yeah?
Well, in the sense, you know, when I said $10 million, they became my friends.
Right. Understood. So there's going to be five scientific presentations during these 2 days of workshops.
Right.
We'll talk more detail about yours and Professor Miller's here in a second, but what are some of the other ones that people will hear
about?
Well,
on the second day, two of the three are actually our senior in terms of completing their degrees, graduate students. These two young ladies have been with me for quite a number of years. They're going to be graduating in the year 2020, and mm-hmm. I want to show them off.
Okay.
And one of them was actually the chief person for doing the studies in Ohio that we'll be talking about. There's another graduate student working on the one in Florida. And so I'm very proud of their PhD students. They're going to be getting their PhD. And I'm very proud of what they're doing. And I thought, well, let them be part of the program.
And so what's a real simple explanation of what their presentations are on?
Like, well, one of them is going to talk about wetlaculture experiment, and okay. especially how we've proven the first part of the wetlaculture, that is the wetlands are cleaning up water, mm-hmm. and it works, and mm-hmm. it works very well. The second part is when we flip them to agriculture, will they grow corn from the nutrients that the wetland captured? And we'll be just starting that maybe next year.
Okay. Well, we've teased our listeners with this wetlaculture stuff, and we've talked about it a while back on the show, but explain what you mean by wetlaculture.
Well, the word is wetlands and agriculture combined, and that's exactly what it would be in a landscape. I wish we could show you the cover of this report that is very colorful. I asked my artist to, we worked back and forth, and I said, I want to see what the duck sees if they're flying over a wetlaculture landscape.
Hmm.
And it would be an intermixed of agriculture and wetlands and balancing, where the wetland takes the nutrients out of the water. We've got a totally saturated landscape. We just got to get the nutrients down. And then you flip it to land or agriculture land by pulling the plug. Gets dry. You put a couple corn seeds or a couple sugar. I don't know what sugar seeds, I guess. And
there must be a seed in there somewhere.
Yeah, and grow crops for a while on the nutrients that the wetlands captured. So no additional fertilizer is allowed in this experiment. And we'll just see how the plants do. So we're 2.5 years into this experiment at our two sites in Ohio, and the one in Florida is about 2 years old.
So the idea is to then you're just basically swapping out land use between wetland and agriculture.
Right.
What are the experiments that you're doing now showing? What is the data that's coming
back? Well, they're showing incredible. It has to be a wetland first. So it's showing in the wetland phase, it's taking nutrients out like crazy.
Right.
60, 70, 80% removal. So then if that builds up, and that builds up in the soil. So the idea is then when you put the corn or sugar or whatever commercial crop you want to put in, the nutrients will be there.
So wetlands remove nutrients by keeping them on site? I was always under the impression that they were growing the cattails or whatever was in the wetland.
Well, you they do, I mean? But that's a minor. Most of it, even the cattails, will fall over and die and land in the soil and turn into organic matter.
Understood. Okay. Yeah,
so
yeah.
All the, at least phosphorus, all of the chemicals stay there. If it's taking out, let's say, 70%, that 70% stays in the soil or stays in the plants that then decay and become part of the soil. So it's a mass from a mass balance. If you're removing 70% of the phosphorus, you're keeping 70%.
And so then the idea would be if you plant a crop there, those crops are not falling over and dying and returning nutrients into the soil. They're being harvested and then taking off site, and that's where you're removing those nutrients. They're going.
Well, that's part of it, but where you're really removing nutrients is you're accumulating them over the years in the wetlands. In fact, we could see the concentrations in the soils increase. It's a small percent every year, but maybe over 10 years it might increase by 10%. So most of the nutrients are staying in the soil. Yeah, and then you're right. Yes, we harvest some of that when we take the crop out. You're right, very right.
Hmm. So is this an idea that has been put into practice anywhere at a large scale?
No, in fact, that's our next agenda, and that's why we have a sort of a business model of our own for my lab. And we want to build a wetland about 100 acres, or find, I guess we want to find a happy farmer.
Right.
Who would be very interested in doing something rather than the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're out there, and find out if they would be interested in not, we're not going to buy their land. We're not going to take their land. They keep their land, and we will pay them if they take phosphorus or nitrogen out of the water. And that's our business model that we'll hear about. So they're not going to lose income. They're just going to make it for a different way for 5 years maybe or 2 years, whatever length of period we determine has to be a wetland. Then they can flip to agriculture and make money the conventional way. So we're not going to take the land from the farmer. We're not going to take out their drainage system because we need that. We need their drainage system to be able to flip between wet and dry, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So
they've got the infrastructure to maintain water levels at
exactly.
certain levels.
So what we would do to make it a wetland, you can literally say put a big cork in the tile drain that's coming out of the land.
Hmm. Have you talked to any farmers about this? I didn't see any agriculture interests in the workshop.
No. Well, we talked to farmers, and in fact, we have a site up in Ohio where we're running this on a farm.
Oh, yeah?
And those two gentlemen who own that, they're landowners. They're not farmers, but they rent it out just for income. But they would just as soon, if the money thing were there, to change their farm to a big wetland.
And so we'll get a little bit more into the business model in a little bit, but the basic idea would be to come up with some sort of funding mechanism that would allow you to pay farmers enough that they aren't going backwards by not using their land.
That's right.
And then being able to grow food on the land using less or maybe even no added fertilizer.
That's right. That's the idea.
And that's all within the realm of scientifically plausible?
Oh, of course.
How about policy? possible.
No, it's so far our experiments are showing that the first phase is absolutely working the way we expected. We had a few glitches of the site down in Naples. It's at the treatment wetland complex that they built in Naples called Freedom Park.
Uh-huh.
And if people want to see what we're talking about on an experimental scale, they can go visit Freedom Park, and it's right up in the northwest corner of the park with signage and all that. So Collier County is very proud that we're running this experiment on their property.
We're talking mostly about phosphorus here?
Both, phosphorus and nitrogen, because that's the thing about all these algal blooms that we're having trouble with here. You can't just deal with one. You've got to deal with both of them. And nitrogen is usually the problem. That's what we found in red tide.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we pinpointed it on some studies we did in 2018 that it was nitrate fertilizer. So that's problem in the red tide, oceanic pollution, if you will.
Right.
And phosphorus is much more common a problem in freshwater and even brackish water. And that's where you get your blue-green algae.
Have you talked to anybody in the world of policymakers, politicians, lawmakers, people like that, and have gotten their take on this idea?
Well, see, it's getting, you know, we had the idea 5 years ago, but we only have 2 years of data. So that's what this event is all about.
Gotcha.
This is sort of our coming out party.
Okay. That's what I was going to ask. I thought that might be the case.
And so we have Chauncey Goss.
Yeah, for chairman of the South Florida Water Management District.
Yes. And we're very happy that he's agreed to come. We have the Captains for Clean Water.
Daniel Andrews.
Daniel Andrews.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Sierra Club. And so we have some good people that could make a difference and try to help us find money. This is basically us coming out and telling Florida what we did. And we did a similar exercise up on Lake Erie this past summer, almost the same speakers.
And I think everybody at this current point in time is on board with the fact that we have to stop harmful algal blooms.
Yes.
And people are all looking for some sort of solution that isn't one that we've talked about until we're blue in the face, and that's what you're hoping this could be.
Yeah, and this is going at the root cause of the algal blooms. I realize, in fact, we have a project that will be starting where you were sort of removing the symptoms, you know, basically killing algae or disrupting them in some way so that the water then looks clean, but you haven't solved the problem that way. All you've done is cosmetics, basically.
Right. Go ahead.
But I think we have to go to the root cause, and that's the nutrients. We just got to get off that opiate, and that's what I call it.
You talk about trying to find a farmer who would be interested in handing over some of their land for this experiment. What about the other side of it? You know, we've got these stormwater treatment areas that are man-made wetlands. Maybe carving out some of that and planting some crops on it.
Of course. Don't think I haven't thought of that. We have 60,000 acres of stormwater treatment areas in the Everglades alone. And those, eventually they're going to be saturated with nutrients. It might be several decades yet. We don't know. But eventually they're going to have to be flipped to agriculture. So that's exactly what I've been thinking.
So, yeah. So what you're saying is that the stormwater treatment areas at some point will be full.
Yes.
Of nutrients.
Yeah.
They'll lose the ability to take more nutrients out of the water.
Right. But they were designed properly, and by that I mean they weren't overloaded.
Understood.
Very, very light loading of nutrients into those things. That's why they work so well. So we're hoping that maybe they'll run for 50 years before we have to go to that step.
Is somebody collecting that kind of data to see where they are in terms of nutrient load absorption?
Oh, yeah. And they're still very effective. Well, South Florida Water Management is measuring that.
Gotcha.
And they're getting excellent data. I follow their reports every year, and they're still getting very good numbers on that. So while that's working, let's keep it working.
If you're just joining the show today, I'm talking with Dr. Bill Mitch. He is a professor and eminent scholar at Florida Gulf Coast University and director of the school's Everglades Wetland Research Park. We're discussing his upcoming workshop on using wetlands to help mitigate harmful algal blooms. To add your thoughts, find us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So let's flip now to the business side of this.
Mm-hmm.
So what's being envisioned as far as some of the mechanisms that might make this, you know, viable for farmers financially and doable when it comes to policymakers changing the rules?
Well, in our business model, and again, I'm helped by a colleague from the University of Notre Dame, who will be here for the workshop on the 20th, I believe.
It's Professor Sam Miller?
Sam Miller. But basically, I was on sabbatical and I was up at Notre Dame, and we would have weekly meetings with Sam, and then we had some other professors tying in. And it was literally training Sam how wetlands take nutrients out of the water.
Right, and that's all new territory for a business guy, probably.
Oh, my God, yes. And then, likewise, when he starts talking about bonds and stuff like that, it was all new business for us. We don't know how those work.
Mm-hmm.
So he's come up with a model, and we helped him define, you know, how many dollars flow this way per pound of phosphorus or per acre. You know, it's just a bunch of calculations.
Right.
And we came up with this flow diagram that I can't show you on radio, but it made sense. And here's the idea that there would be some source of money that has to be generated from the economy that we can't do, because those are all taxes, and we're not allowed to tax. So therefore, we do need the government to either tax somebody who's polluting water, that's mm-hmm. one way, or penalty or whatever you want to call it, or have a light tax on those people who are using the waterways, such as the Gulf of Mexico or Lake Erie or what have you. And so that has to happen. A third alternative that many people have told me is just find a big corporation that wants to be greening, and they might take care of all your problems. Now, maybe that's true. But so there has to be a continuous money flow for this to work continuously. But there's also the idea of creating what are called environmental bonds. And this would increase the capitalism, if you will, of this project. In other words, there would be more cash flow if people buy bonds, and maybe they get 1% or 2% return.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not going to solve the big problem. But
you're talking about even maybe people, like individuals,
yes.
not
oh,
just
yeah.
corporations
oh, yeah.
or government.
Yeah, this is people who would be buying these bonds, and we would try to ensure that they at least get some return on investment. They're not going to get rich. It'll be like the utility stocks.
Right.
But it would be a return, and I think most people would love to do that.
Right. It would be the kind of investing that you would do because you want to support the investment,
exactly.
not necessarily because you want to
yes.
put
yeah.
it in your portfolio
right.
and make money.
Exactly. And there's a lot of that going on now. I mean, in fact, all of the big investment firms are going sustainable, if you believe all the literature you start seeing.
Right, right.
But so it's the right time for this idea to come forward. So you got this money flow back and forth into the bond system, and then you also have flow of money going down to the farmer. And right now we're estimating maybe – I'm going to give this number, and I'll get it wrong probably, but I think we have a number something on the order of $300 per acre per year of cash flow to the farmer for producing clean water. The product is not corn. The product is not sugar. The product is clean water. And if you went down on the street corner and said, what would you like more, clean water, corn, or sugar? I think 90% of the people would say clean water.
Do you have a sense of how much an acre of sugarcane land profits a farmer at the end of an average year?
Oh, we did look that up for corn. I don't know the sugar numbers, but they got to be comparable. We were finding $200 to $300.
So that's why you're trying to come up with that target.
Yes.
You wouldn't just say 300 if it's 1,000.
Right.
Meaning the farmers would just say, no way.
Yeah. No, this is very comparable, very competitive with growing a crop would be to be growing clean water.
Hmm. It reminds me of, I think it's FPL, who's been paying some farmers to put solar in, and they're paying them mm-hmm. in a way that is almost as valuable as doing citrus.
Right.
To have,
right.
you know, to collect sun, basically.
Yeah. It's that idea. But what we're doing with the wetlands and so on is we're using nature. Nature is doing the hard, heavy lifting of cleaning the water, and then we flip it to agriculture when we've got enough nutrients in the soil.
This is a sort of an adjacent question to what you're talking about, but I've always wondered, you know, farmers buy fertilizer to grow their crops. The excess fertilizer that the crops don't take up is what we're talking about. That's
right.
That's the nutrient pollution.
That's the pollution.
They paid for that fertilizer. That nutrient pollution could have value to grow other things. Is there any way to loop that into a system somehow where you're collecting it back and then Or that's exactly what we're doing. That's what we're doing here. We're just not packaging it up into bags of fertilizer. We're just using the land where it is.
You can't do that with a Caterpillar,
right? Yeah,
and a truck. You've got to do it with a system that knows how to do that, and that's the roots in the soil from wetland plants. That's another way of describing this. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Because I've always thought that, but I envisioned in my head some magic way to, you know, you go into Home Depot and you buy normal fertilizer from Miracle-Gro, or you buy fertilizer that was once nutrient runoff. But that's not probably going to happen.
No. There's no dump trucks in our solution. That's what's so unique about it. When we said we're going to recycle the nutrients, everybody said, "Oh, well, you're going to probably use a lot of dump trucks to dig it up and take it to a farm." No. We're flipping the wetland to a farm. But somewhere else, we're flipping a farm to a wetland so that you're not overall losing wetlands. That's the whole point, is we don't want to lose wetlands. We want to start gaining substantial amounts of wetlands.
I'm not a farmer, but it seems to me that if the economics worked out, it might seem kind of nice to be able to turn over some of your land to something that's less intensive in terms of what you need to do. For a period of time,
yes.
You might be able to focus more on the normal crops that you're – you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It seems like
– it's fun.
says wetland scientist Bill Mitch.
Well, then, of course, you'd have to – I'm sure the system would have some checks and balances where you'd have to determine how many tons or grams or pounds of phosphorus you've taken out of the water and so on. Now, that's easy, and I think that can be done with having a consultant or somebody take water samples every so often. So I don't see that as a big issue, but I do see the fact that it gives an alternative land, use of the landscape. And we didn't have it down here, but last summer there was so much rain in the Corn Belt. I don't know if you remember hearing about that.
I do.
That people just did not plant.
Right.
Period. Or they planted, straw or something. You know, they planted hay. I saw a lot of hay bales up in Ohio last year because it was so wet. So, you know, I think that summer caused a lot of farmers in the Midwest at least to rethink, do they really want to go back to typical farming again? I think an idea like this. Now, we're not ready to say it's ready to go to market right now. There's still a lot of issues. These experiments that we're running in Ohio and down here in Florida, I've contended that they are actually 10-year experiments because we want to see how long it takes for the soil to increase, and then we want to see how well when you flip them, that the agriculture crop grows. And we expect the first time we try it that the crops won't grow because we didn't keep it a wetland long enough.
Right.
So we're about to try that part of the experiment, though, with a graduate student from FGCU next spring.
You've been working on this, on wetlands in general, for your whole career. You're literally one of the authors of the book called Wetlands that's now, you know, been around, 40 years, probably something like that?
At least 86.
You know, are you optimistic that we could have a solution in sight, even if it's decades down the road? Because this is obviously an issue that's not going to go away. And as we saw back in 2018, how bad things can get when a harmful algal bloom really takes off.
Yes, I'm optimistic in a strange way because I know the water pollution is going to continue with what we're doing now. I know it's going to continue. So we've got to get out of our box that we're in of, well, best management practices, blah, blah, blah. Those aren't going to work. We need a wholesale, I don't know, cleansing, vacuum cleaner cleansing of our landscape, and this is how you do it.
We're basically out of time, but I was listening back to a talk that you gave about a year and a half, I think, ago, and you sort of imagined a future where when you were flying over South Florida, you would see, and that's what's on the cover of your workshop here, like a mosaic. You described it as a mosaic of wetlands and agriculture fields, none of which are ever permanently that. You think if enough people envision that, it could become the way things are done someday?
Yes. And I think people have to come to our workshop so they can get that picture that's on the front of the program.
Well, we'll put it on our web post, too, for this.
Okay. Because that is. That's a bird's eye view. What a duck will see when they fly back looking for their wetland and say, wait a minute, my wetland's moved. But, oh, there it is right over there. It's not going to be a big deal for those ducks to find a wetland. It just might be you know, maybe a half a mile away or something.
Yeah, I guess they have mechanisms for that. That is all the time we have for today's show. I want to thank my guest, Dr. Bill Mitch, is a professor and eminent scholar at Florida Gulf Coast University and director of the school's Everglades Wetland Research Park. Dr. Mitch, thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you, Mike, for having me.
We've been discussing the upcoming workshop on wetlands mitigating harmful algal blooms. That's 6 to 9 p.m. on two consecutive evenings this Thursday and Friday, February 20th and 21st at FGCU's Kapnick Center at the Naples Botanical Garden. There's a $30 registration charge for the two-day event, and pre-registration is required. You can find a link with more information on our website, wgcu.org/GCL. If you missed any of today's show, you can always hear episodes in their entirety on our website, or you can subscribe to our podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts. Our show today was produced by yours truly. Our director is Richard Chinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Life is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Mike Canary. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.